Item number nine, proposed amendments to Regulation 4 of VAC 2250 pertaining to the taking of striped bass, established management measures for the 2007 fall recreational fishery. Mr. O'Reilly, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Commissioner, members of the Commission. I think I'd like to start off by saying that there's been a very active pursuit by the Commission since 2003 to keep Virginia's harvest, both recreational and commercial, and that probably goes back further because of the nature of the commercial fishery, but to keep them close to quota. We do have a regulation, Regulation 252, and that establishes an annual quota for each fishery, and each fishery has the identical quota, and it's been that way for many years. So there have been quite a few attempts to adjust the recreational fishery. It's much more difficult than the commercial fishery to monitor and to manage, and the primary reason is that the data that's collected for the recreational fishery is collected by the National Marine Fisheries Service, its contractor, Macro International, and it's based on intercepting or interviewing fishermen is part of it. The other part is a telephone survey, a random digit dialing of coastal households to get effort information. The intercept data provides information on catch rates. Together, these two different types of data are expanded into harvest estimates. And as I go through this presentation, just realize that we work with about 500 to 700 fish as our data. That's our database that we work these options with. But keep in mind the 674 fish from 2006 from the Chesapeake area only, that gets expanded both in terms of weight and number. And the number of fish was over 384,000 to give you an idea of the expansion. The pounds were 2.4 million pounds. So there is a statistical process, whereas with the commercial fishery, it's a census process, as you know, and adjustments can be made by average weights that are taken by each fisherman now, and also total harvest. So two different systems entirely. The first slide shows the three options that were advertised for this public hearing today. Option one maintains the no-take slot limit that was really established for the 2005 fishery first, and that no-take slot limit means that you cannot harvest and possess striped bass between 28 and 34 inches total length. That was in place in 2004. Somehow, as you'll see, 2005 was a fairly modest fishery and compared to 2004 and 2006. But it's really 2006 results which are the focus of everyone's attention for how to adjust that harvest in 2007. So to do that, some companion options or parts of the options are shown. Two of the options, one and two, as was pointed out to me more than once, are really the same option. They involve attaching a one fish limit during some portion of December or all of December in addition with the no-take slot limit. The third option is a departure from one and two in that it establishes a closed season which would start December 25th and end December 31st. So I thought I would show you results first of the preferences that we receive by email. Typically we receive a lot of emails. Jack Travelstead really does get a lot of emails on these issues, and you'll see that there was only a modest amount this time. Option 1 had 11 emails, Option 2 10, Option 3 28. With no shame, I'm going to tell you that Options 1 and 2, based on the staff recommendation you're going to hear, the staff recommendation is for option one, that you can legitimately add option one and two results because they are the same management measure, just a difference in days. And I think you would find that most anglers, if they were asked a second time, do you support going to a 22-day closure in December when you already supported going to a 31-day closure, or do you support the weak season, it's logical that they would support going to the 22-day close season. So I've combined option 1 and 2 to show you that it's 21 votes compared to option 3, which is 28. In a similar manner, the reason that Jack did not receive a lot of emails is because we devised a poll for the first time this year, and we did it rather hurriedly, I think, but we thought it was a pretty good idea. I think all around everyone thought this would be a good way for anglers to have immediate access, to have an ease of giving their opinion. And I think that's still true, that we do feel that way. But I will have a little bit on that in a second, but I want to just show you the results. 159 preferences for option 1, 74 for option 2, 298 for option 3. If you combine options 1 and 2 in the fashion I did earlier, then you have 233. So about the poll, some thoughts on that are that it might be that we need to establish some background information with these polls. And this is just some information. It's not something that is necessarily can't be improved upon by anyone. But in thinking about the poll, we did have thoughts that it would have been good to give them a little background, such as the Chesapeake area has been over their quota each year since 2001 for the recreational fishery. Secondly, the harvest of larger fish has increased in recent years, and there are indications from the recent stock assessment, which was just completed and vetted last week, that that trend continues. So on a coastwide basis, if the Chesapeake is roughly 75% of the coastwide population, then there are going to be more large fish in 2007. Also, we're not sure, based on some of the comments we received by email or by telephone call, that there's a lot of knowledge about the role of the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. But we are part of a triumvirate with the Potomac River Fisheries Commission and Maryland sharing one quota. And that quota contains each jurisdiction's recreational and commercial fisheries. So those harvests are all added together to see if they go over quota. It's come very close in 2005 and 2006. We think 92% is cutting it close. We think 97% of the Baywide quota in 2004 is really cutting it close. Can this Baywide quota be breached? Can there be an overage of the overall Baywide quota? Yes, there can be. There hasn't yet. But I think everyone should be aware of that. The last item that would be helpful for anglers would be to let them know about the National Marine Fisheries Service and the fact that it is their data expansion techniques that result in the harvest estimates that we have. We've heard many voices against this process over the years. We have rigorously worked with the National Marine Fisheries Service with our doubts about their data, and in both cases, the most recent one this year, earlier in 2005, they really haven't budged in terms of their process. And you'll see in your packet that there is a dialogue, an email dialogue, between National Marine Fisheries Service and me concerning large fish and the numbers estimated. And when you get to the end of that email correspondence, National Marine Fisheries Service stands by its role that they're not there to help manage a quota, anyone's quota. They're there really for trends of information. And once you start splitting data, a coastwide data set into a statewide data set into a bay data set, you run the risk of having a very poor precision in your techniques, let alone the accuracy is something no one's really sure about. This gives you an idea of the performance of the recreational fishery over time. You can see in the gray bars or whitish bars that generally the number of fish has increased. It did drop in 2005. You can also see that there were more fish in 2004 than in 2006. The difference between 2004 and 2006 is that there were more smaller fish, let's say fish less than 28 inches, than in 2006. If you look at the blue bars, you can see the harvest estimates by the National Marine Fisheries Service. And if you judge them against the black bars, you can see that there's been quite a few overages. 2001, 2002, very minor. 2003, 2004, and 2006, not as minor. And I think in terms of the overall bay-wide quota again, one thing that the Atlantic states are very aware of about our recreational fishery as of last week is the fact that we do harvest large fish. And there was even some false information that our Wave 6 fishery is predominantly coastal migrants. For convenience, the ASMFC attributes a coastal migrant as one that is greater than 28 inches. So the prevailing thought among some states is that that Wave 6 fishery is one where a lot of coastal migrants are harvested. The reality is that the estimate has been fairly stable since 2004. 18% to 20% fish greater than 28 inches. And I think you could make a case that 28 inches might not be the appropriate demarcation for a coastal versus a resident fish. But one thing everyone looks about at the bay is our entire quota is based on resident fish. That's the way it was designed. That's the expectation of the ASMFC, that it's resident fish, those fish that are essentially not migrating because there's already a set aside for coastal migrants in the spring. The bay-wide performance, and I think one difficulty about the performance of the recreational fishery is that most of the overages since 2000, if you look at Virginia in the middle, have been associated with the recreational fishery. Some very small. We also had a larger quota back in 2001 and 2002. Some not so small, approaching 900,000 pounds easily in a couple of the years. When you look at the commercial fishery, there was an overage in Virginia. Here's the quota. There's the overage. There was an overage in the Potomac River Fisheries Commission. If you look to the right of the figure down here, you can see the difference and how close things have come. When in 2004 you have an 8.4 million pound quota and combined six fisheries essentially in the bay, you're 242,000 pounds less. That's not a very large margin, especially compared to the early years of 2000 to 2003. 2006, not quite as close, you might think, but when you realize that the recreational overage in Virginia was 871,000 pounds, you can probably see that breaking the bay-wide quota is something that's possible. And when it is done, there won't be the ability for us to have ad hoc committees or FMAC to guide us. There will be the ASMFC technical committee going through a rigorous examination of any methods that they will be satisfied arrive at putting the fishery back where it should be. We did have the ad hoc committee again this year. We had two meetings, one in July, one in August. And here's the total in pounds, 2006 harvest, and we are managing in terms of the quota by a poundage quota. And if you look at the quota here, 1.5 million pounds for 2007, which is the same as 2006. So it means the overage in 2006 or the difference between the 2006 harvest and 2007 quota is the same, 871,000 pounds. Right from the first meeting, the ad hoc committee said that they did not think they should account for what they refer to, what we refer to as well, as illegal fish. We're really not sure whether they're illegal fish. They showed up in the bay harvest. There are two thoughts about this. One, ocean fish were intercepted by National Marine Fisheries Service and included in the bay harvest, or in fact, they were illegal fish. But because we have a process with the ad hoc committee and FMAC to guide us through, we're aware that if we don't account for every pound of fish, but at least can make a lot of progress this time, I think in 2005 we said some progress. For 2007, we'd like to make more progress on reducing the harvest. So the target reduction for working purposes through the ad hoc committee was 643,000 pounds, which is the difference from the illegal fish, those fish that were landed and were between 28 to 34 inches, and the actual difference of 871,000 pounds. The ad hoc committee has the type of information that's similar to what I showed in the second slide. They know all the ins and outs of the fishery, of ASMSC, and of management measures, because most of the ad hoc committee has been through this process several times. And each time, we do bring them any updated information. So I would say they're very aware from different aspects. We have charter representation, we have private boat representation, we have geographical coverage. At least we try and do the best we can and keep the committee to a manageable number, which is usually around 10. So at the second meeting, they went through these five options and were asked to, there were eight members present at that meeting, they were asked to choose their top two preferences. So each of them could choose two. There's 16 possible preferences altogether. And you see that the top preference was E and the second preference was C. Well, E is the same thing as option one that you saw earlier, and C is option two that you saw earlier. And I thought it was an interesting round of meetings this year because the group is very candid to the point that there were comments from one and sometimes even a couple of the members that they had concerns about the large fish. And I think that was more than just a few. There were definitely concerns voiced over the number of large fish that were being harvested. And if you consider we're on a weight quota, a pounds quota, I'd have that concern too. The second concern expressed by one member from the Lower Bay was that the harvest estimate we ended up with was probably too low based on all the activity that he's seen, that others have seen, the live eel fishery which is caught on in the bay, all other factors. So, you know, I was definitely taken aback a little bit by that comment, but that's why it's good to continue this committee. And you can see the poundage associated with C and E, 849,000 pounds, 727,000 pounds. And also, you can see option B, which the FMAC endorsed for your public hearing, the one-week closure, 672,000 pounds. I don't think you need to take those potential savings, but they are potential savings, lightly, but I think you need to consider that we are challenged to work with this data. And the reason we're challenged is there was a different type of slot limit for 2004 and then the current no-take slot limit, which started in 2005. So you don't have a pristine data set that you can just take blocks out of and come up with reductions. You do have to do your best working with 2004 data and 2006 data. And just, you know, let you know that this is our best approximation, but it is a potential savings. The other thing to point out is that we did have illegal fish, 220-some thousand pounds of it, in 2006. So any of these potential savings are going to be downgraded by any illegal fish that shows up in our harvest estimates in 2007. The ad hoc committee also was very helpful because they spotted some inconsistencies with the intercept areas, and this really shows you where the NIMS contractor does the intercepting and throughout the whole fishery. And you can see that there's a lot of intercepts down in Lynn Haven in Wave 6. You can also see that you have very few intercepts in some cases, whether you're up in the Belle Isle area, Buzzard Point Marina, even down here at Harrison's. There can be an endless discussion about the distribution of the intercepts. The way that we're aware that things work is that each year our recreational license funds are used to supplement what the National Marine Fisheries Service does for Virginia and other states in terms of the intercepts. And the idea is to get the best coverage possible. I think it's a situation with the entire MRFS, or Marine Recreational Fishery Statistics program, under review with a report due to Congress in 2009, that we still have to keep after National Marine Fisheries Service with questions. Some of our constituents did a good job of that back in 2005. We have to still do that to try and make sense of why there's more pressure at some sites than other, or why, as some staff people would tell you, well, they really do go to those sites, but they aren't there at the proper time. I mean, fishermen are coming in at night. So it's an imperfect system, and we're left with a perhaps imperfect estimate that we are still held to. One thing the ad hoc committee looked at intensely was this large fish issue. And you see a box around the fish that are 44 inches to 50, and you see that there are 13,000 fish out of 384,000 fish that were in that size category. And you can imagine, once you start looking at the weight associated with these fish, it really makes a difference when you're trying to manage a weight quota, because they all have high weights associated with them. The main problem the ad hoc committee had, and you'll find it in your evaluation, I think under attachment 2, a dialogue with National Marine Fisheries Service, was that the number of citation fish, which are shown here as bay killed fish, but there's also releases, really, to the angling community, there should be somewhere between 50% or a little more of the number of trophy or citation fish, I should say, in 1 year that come back in the National Marine Fisheries Service estimate. So if that's accurate, then you would believe that instead of the 13,000 large fish, you know, more or less something over 1,000 should have been what National Marine Fisheries Service found. If you read the interchange with the National Marine Fisheries Service and staff, you'll see that one of the last comments were directed towards the saltwater tournament and these estimates in 2006, which have ramped up quite significantly compared to former years. I mean, the trend is there. There were more large fish, even if you just look at citation data, in 2006 than other years. I think staff didn't win that battle with National Marine Fisheries Service or didn't even come close, but at least we did get the opportunity to have National Marine Fisheries Service look at the problem from all different ways. So the 13,000 large fish stands. And when the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, if 2006 had been a bay-wide overage, then 13,000 fish would have stood with the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission as well. And here's just a little bit of that dialogue, I think, from the last series of emails. And, you know, there's some unusual discussion here focusing on the wrong issue, and I more or less did say that to National Marine Fisheries Service, that it's not about the weight. We have really good weight data because we can use our commercial weights, even if they're from hook and line commercial, and apply them to data where NIMS does not take a weight. But, you know, the end result is there's not going to be movement on the part of National Marine Fisheries Service on this issue. So to look at the data that we have at hand, one thing is the large fish issue. When you just look at numbers of fish, and this is in percentages over here, you can see that a lot of fish in the recreational fishery are relatively small, less than 24 inches, 60-some percent, and that nearly 79%, 80% are less than 28 inches. So by number, if we had strictly a numbers quota, you know, that might look pretty good. If you look at 2004 data, and this is weight at length, so this is the pounds per each length along the bottom here and how much they are. So, for example, 18-inch fish amounted to just about 60,000 pounds. And you go to, that looks like 23 inches, that's more like 160,000 pounds. And when you do a cumulative distribution, it shows you that 51% of the 2004 fishery in pounds was associated with fish that were 28 inches or less. And correspondingly, 28% were for fish 34 inches or greater. And I'm using those two segments because that's what we currently have had with our no-take slot limit, fish 28 inches or less or 34 inches or greater. So you have 51% versus 28% in 2004. 2006 changes quite a bit. Your 28% of where the weight is distributed is now almost 50% of it associated with 34-inch fish and greater. And compared to 51%, you're down to 40% of the weight distributed with fish 28 or less. So I think if you isolate the data on a 34-inch marker, which is what's been done here, and look at the comparison of the numbers of fish and the pounds. So each couplet here starts out with the pounds from 2006, followed by the numbers, and then the pounds of 2005, followed by the numbers. And you can see what was indicated earlier is that by sheer weight, pounds, there's been a large increase over previous years with the 34-inch and greater fish. you find nearly as many fish by number in 2003 at 43,000 compared to 45,000 in 2006. So something has occurred, and what that is larger fish. There are more larger fish available. Another way to look at this is to look at the age composition. And you do find 34-inch fish that are age 8, but you also find 34-inch fish that might be age 12. So there is some variety in terms of the size at age, but age 8 plus is looked at for several reasons. One, it's looked at by the ASMSC as what they call the fully recruited fishing mortality. That means that those fish are completely recruited by the fishery from 8 and older. A second thing is, if you look back at this coastal migrants issue, ASMSC is looking at 8 and older. And 8 and older is probably a more appropriate categorization of a coastal migrant than 28 inches and older. But what you see again, you see this large spike with the 13 plus. So this includes fish up through, and I know Dr. Jones is here and her lab has aged up through 18, I believe, up through age 18. I don't think I saw an age 19. But so this covers all ages from 13 to 18. In recent years, you did get up to 18. And what it tells us is that there are more fish in the larger age groups as well that are causing this spike. And there are. You know, there just are more fish in that. And it doesn't take a lot. 2,000 extra fish in this composite of 8 to 13 plus is a lot of pounds. The next few slides we'll talk about options 1 and 2 and really the merits of options 1 and 2 as compared to option 3. The merits of option 1 and 2 are that at some point in December, which is the most active month of the fishery, anglers will not be allowed to keep two fish. They will only keep one fish. And it really doesn't matter that those fish that they don't keep are small or large. The fact is that they won't keep it. And that is going to be a direct way to adjust the harvest as long as the effort in 2007, the weather in 2007, the availability of striped bass in 2007 is very similar to 2006. I mean, there certainly are aspects of this fishery which have nothing to do, with trying to manage a quota. They have to do with a lot of variables. So I've highlighted all the areas where you could have a two fish savings. I think one thing you'll see is there are some three fish and four fish and five fish limits taken on a two fish limit. They are fairly rare. They're within 5%, but they do occur, and so certainly you would gain fish here. And the way this table reads, to give you an example, there are 41 different interviews with fishermen where one fisherman was involved and had two fish. So there were 82 fish altogether. And so here's a case where of that 82 fish, if you really thought things worked exactly the way they should, since this is December, that would turn out to be 41 fish. It would be cut in half if all of December was taken into account. Try to remember, this is 41 fish out of a total data pool of 647 fish that was expanded up to 384,000 fish. So it's not trivial to think about the numbers of fish here. So you can go down here and look, and I think the point is that once you get to a situation here, you have 18 intercepts, three fishermen each time, two fish each, so 108 fish were available. That could be a savings where you would cut that in half. Or it could be a savings where you would cut that by a third if you had the December 10th through December 31st option with the no-take option. And as I indicate, things have to be the same pretty much for that to work out. Just another look. 51 interviews here, and these are all fish less than or equal to 28. Yes, there are more than the ones greater than or equal to 34 when it involved intercepting just one fisherman. So when the intercept data comes in, it comes in either as a single fisherman or two or more fishermen in a trip. So 73 of these fish were second fish out of this total of 85 fish. Only 5 fish of 20 were second fish here. This looks at the same approach, but this looks at multiple fishermen per interceptor interview. So anywhere from 2 to 5 fishermen in the trip. And you really just have to average everything out. You don't know whose fish are whose, so you do have to make an average assumption. But when you do that, you again see a lot of fish in the less than or equal to 28, some greater than or equal to 34. But this is 30 interviews, 30 different trips, if you will. It wanes as you get into five fishermen trips, and a very small amount of fish. But anywhere you look, these are all two fish or more. Two fish or more, whether it's two fishermen, three, or five fishermen. Those are all intercepts, or trips might be a convenient way to think about it, with two fish or more. Want to contrast that approach with a time closure, and there really was weak support for a time closure at the ad hoc committee. The FMAC endorsed it as the number one option, but the ad hoc committee really could not build any favor on the closure or the one-week closure. And this is simply a situation where you have a certain amount of harvest here in wave 6, which if you look at that number and you saw the 2.4 million pound total harvest, you know that a lot of the fishery is taking place in wave 6. And a lot of wave 6, which is November and December, of the fishery is taking place in December. So I think it was good that the ad hoc committee, at least when they talked about this option, did focus on December, because December certainly has a better chance than November for making a reduction. So you take the 61 days in November and December combined, and all you can do is to come up with a daily amount of 34,855 pounds. You can see by contrast, if you did something from October 4th to the 31st, which is part of Wave 5, it's only 199 pounds a day. So this is part of Option 3, where 243,000 pounds would be associated with the season closure, or the week closure. And I think it's important to sort of let you know as well that all of the options are in the high 100 to the 200 plus thousand amount that have been tacked on to what already existed, which was the no-take slot limit, which is the bulk of the pounds reduced, and that's 428,000 pounds. Many times we talk about recoupment. It started with weak fish probably in 1994, and recoupment's a pretty tough thing to prove because you usually adopted regulations and trying to weed out how recoupment worked and how it didn't is too difficult. But recoupment is a way that fishermen or fisheries try to make up for either lost time, lost fishing days, whatever it may be. And the idea with option three, with the week closure, is that there certainly could be recoupment. If fishermen know there's going to be a week closed in December, there's nothing to prevent them from taking an extra trip that they normally would have taken before the week is closed. You know, they'll take it before the 24th, the extra trip. They may take it in the beginning of the month. I know that fishermen plan very well what they're going to do in terms of their trip. So we expect recoupment from that aspect. The other strange kind of recoupment maybe is to think about this fishery in relation to the ocean fishery. And we do have demographics on the opinion poll that Joe Grist put together, if you do like to see them later. But if you think about it, some fishermen certainly wouldn't mind a week closed in December because they can go to the ocean and fish in the ocean, which, according to last year, with 1.6 million pounds, which was more than double than any previous year, was a very good fishery in the ocean as well. So there's that form of recoupment. At the same time, here's an example of the early days, and this is recoupment in reverse. In 1993 and 1994, we had a 32-day season, which was Thursday through Sunday, and that was our season. And many people talked about and marveled about the the kind of the derby atmosphere of that fishery. And what you can see in 1993, this is just looking at wave six, November and December, mostly December, 170,000 trips. In 1994, 220,000 trips. In 1995, 176,000 trips. The harvest estimates of the 3 years really aren't that different, especially 1994 and 1995. In 1994, we went to the ASMFC and asked for a longer season, 107-day season. And they said, no way, because you're going to quadruple your harvest. And we said, no, we're not. We've got a derby fishery. We have an intense fishery. If there are more days, it's not going to change anything. Well, here's the answer, I guess 12 years later, for the ASMFC, in that the number of trips are similar and the harvest is similar. This was our first 107-day season. If you want to put this on equal grounds with 93 and 94, then all you have to say is there were 61 days available for fishing compared to 32. And things didn't change much. But reverse this and take our 120-day season now, or take the 61 days and throw it into a mini derby situation of taking off a prime week, and what's liable to happen? So, reverse recoupment. That's not copyrighted, by the way, so it's okay to use that. This is an information about our 2006 fishery, and one thing that should grab your attention is in 2004, look at the mix of species. 2005, pretty good mix of species. 2006, a lesser mix. And what was everyone doing with those 418,000 trips in November and December in 2006 compared to 2005, where there were more trips? It looks like they were catching more species in 2005. 2006 looks highly targeted. If you look at the data, these are the catch. So it's harvest plus releases, but it's a true measure to go along with the effort. The catch went from 875,000 fish of other species than striped bass in 2005 down to 135,000 in 2006. So there is a one-track pursuit. 1 year does not a trend make. We'll look at this again in 2007 and 2008. The staff recommendation, which is in sections 90 and 100 of your packet, is that the amendments to the regulation that would establish a no-take slot limit between 28 and 34 inches from October 4th to December 31st should be coupled with a one striped bass possession limit from December 10 through December 31. And this is option one. Sir, that's all I have.
Very well done, Rob. A couple of housekeeping things, if you would. We discussed the poll initially.
Yes.
And I want to make it clear that it was not actually our idea.
Thank you.
If you want to.
Yeah, I think that we had a fishing group member and really someone with the CCA who suggested it to the commissioner. The commissioner suggested it to staff. Staff initially said, well, the old standby email approach works just fine. And then I think after some further review and thinking about it, we did enact the poll. We did not, as I mentioned earlier, give it the significance because of the late request that we probably would with future polls.
Yeah. And as we know, not scientific within reason because
it's an opinion poll.
It's an opinion poll.
Yes, sir.
The other concern that you hit upon, which your boss and I, Jack and I, were talking about the other day, you know, when I came on last year, I harped on the fact of having good science to make good decisions. And when I went back to college at the ripe old age of 40, I had Dr. Glenn Weber there, who was one of the best math professors I think I've ever known because he could teach statistics to a country boy like me. And he said, you may not end up at IBM as a statistician, but you'll know how to read something and determine that something's not really good data when you get finished this class. And any time you take a sample N equals 684 and extrapolate it to 387,000, as far as getting numbers are concerned, not to throw in the other parameters that we have to deal with in that specific problem, things are kind of, if you would look at the problem as a student, I would think that it was so far off that I must not have gotten the right answer. Would that be a logical conclusion?
The conclusion probably is good. What I can tell you is the 674 fish sample is a fairly big sample compared to what NIMS works with other states. And were NIMS able to design the survey for each state the way they, you know, the way it should be, then probably it's reasonable to think that the 674 fish would be okay. I think it's the workings within, before the extrapolation, before the expansion, that turn this into less than an accurate reflection of our fishery. However, the precision is very good. The precision of these estimates for every state is typically 10% or low, which is good. But it's the inner workings which are problematic. And I think our anglers, you know, they look at this data, a lot of them, and there should be something else done with the intercepts, the way they're looked at. We have put pressure on NIMS before.
Can you explain where we're going with that? Because it's been brought to my attention from a lot of the public that the system is so flawed that it needs to be fixed. It begs to be fixed. And now, based on at least a meeting that I went to in San Diego in May, they're talking about the National Registry, which would allow...
I'm somewhat familiar with that. I think there are, I want to say, seven different committees which have been assigned not only for the registry situation, but also to, I won't say fix MRFs, but I think that's what the layperson like myself could say, to fix MRFs or make improvements to MERS. Dr. Jones is here. She was part of the, I think, the NRC review that led to the finding about MERS having some real difficulty. So she's very adept at that information. But these committees are working towards that end. It's just that it will be January 1, 2009 before we know what has changed. I think the other part to address, and it's a tough one, but a pounds quota is an awfully rugged thing to place on a recreational fishery in Virginia, Maryland, and PRFC, when along the coast there are no quotas for the recreational fishery, and you can pick several years in the last five and watch doublings of recreational harvest depending on whether you're looking at New Jersey, New York, or where you're looking. So part of this answer might be that some way that, you know, Jack, I guess, would have the inside track to see once this MRFs process is deemed finished, maybe there's some other ways we look at this situation we have. We went with a pounds quota in 1996 for the 1997 fishery because we finally found a way that we could raise the Virginia quotas. So we joined with Maryland and PRFC strictly for that reason. 10 years later, it might be good to, you know, really think about a new approach.
Well, my point is I just don't want the people, the public that we serve collectively, to think that we're totally pleased with the data that's being provided to us in the decision-making process. And apparently the powers that be in the federal sector aren't either, because by virtue of the fact of the committees that are being formed, right, which we have membership on, and trying to develop ways to improve sampling with less time wasted.
Right.
So
that's true.
Whether we end up with a national, it's whether similar to a hunter identification program, to a fisherman identification program, and considering all the exemptions that we have now that don't capture those individuals that fish off of fishing piers, that off charter boats, that off of six people to the boat, and over 65 and under 16. A lot of data missing there, a lot of it. So what we can do to improve our numbers certainly would bear witness to us having a better program and making decisions. But I just wanted to make sure that our public knows that we're not just saying, just in lockstep, yep, MRFs, yep. No, not it.
Yes, sir. Anyway.
Comments from the commission? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Rob about the, just a little bit more detail on the consequences potentially of exceeding the Bay-wide quota as it relates to the need for action today. You said previously that if the Bay-wide quota were exceeded, corrective action would have to be taken, and that action would likely be specified not by this commission necessarily, but by the ASMFC Technical Committee. Would that also include a payback of the overage?
Absolutely.
Okay, so it would not
of the offending jurisdiction, and then within the jurisdiction of the fishery is probably the way it would turn out. So that, you know, the trends you saw with Virginia being over each year since 2001, if the overage got large enough that it was a Bay-wide overage, specifically the plan that we would submit, I think, would be a reduction in the recreational fishery, and that's how that would work.
Okay, and I share the chairman's concern about the nature of the MRFs data. There are a lot of questions about that, but that MRFs data would, in fact, be used by ASMFC to be the basis for the noncompliance finding and then the corrective action as well, right?
Yes, and we've had two challenges. There was probably a better challenge by Tom Powers back in 2005 that we worked with Tom on the NIMS estimates. That didn't work out to anything that changed anything, but they worked on it. This year, you know of the working with NIMS on the large fish issue. New York has spent a lot of time on their summer flounder fishery, working directly with NIMS, visiting NIMS, sitting down with NIMS, having quite a few meetings over their recreational summer flounder fishery. In the end of the day, the estimate stood. So We are in that position.
And Rob, finally, you mentioned the polling results, and it was fairly clear in that, while it may not be a scientific poll, that the public, the majority of the public, expressed a support for a one-week closure at the end of the season. And you spoke during your presentation about the issue of recoupment. When you extrapolated or calculated the potential savings from the various options, I guess the savings for that option were roughly 672,000 pounds. Did you make any assumptions about recoupment, or does that assume no recoupment?
No recoupment.
Okay. And in all likelihood, now that if the ocean fisheries are at the same time, there's certainly opportunity for that closure to result in a displacement of effort into the ocean fisheries.
To some extent,
either,
and I think
spatially or temporally.
Yes, sir. Excuse me. I think from the demographic information, about 30%, at least at the time of your evaluation, were in a situation where they could easily go to the ocean. You also have a situation where the data set gives actual days in wave six or in December when the intercepts are done. But that doesn't mean you can count on that type of fishery taking place the next year on those days. In other words, you have to really look at the entire month, which is what we did. Look at the entire month when you're looking at both the seasonal closure, the week closure, and the one fish limit. And let's face it, if the weather the last week in December is horrible, as opposed to 2006, well, right there you have some built-in margin or a buffer until you consider that fishermen also read about the weather, and they're probably going to take an earlier trip, take an extra earlier trip. So it's, I think all in all, we've tried closures before with other fisheries. They do help to some extent the longer they are, but if you look at summer flounder, what drives the reductions in summer flounder is the size limit, number one. The bag limit change or possession limit change or any type of small seasonal closure is definitely quite a step behind that. With striped bass, we don't know exactly because we haven't tried a closure, but you do know from the information you saw that some of those two fish limits, definitely the ones with one fisherman, and likely a lot of the ones with multiple fishermen, they're going to have to be one fish limits. Now, there have been concerns with high grading, where fishermen with a one fish limit are going to be quite selective as to what they keep, and they're going to release other fish. How many, we don't know. I think on the one hand, we have no information that fishermen don't already high grade. There's a two fish limit. We don't know that they take four, five, six fish and end up with two because they're high grading throughout the trip. So I don't think that that's a substantive argument against a one fish limit. The other thing is, it's in your evaluation, Virginia is very conservative in terms of releases for striped bass. We don't release a lot of striped bass. We harvest quite a few striped bass, anywhere from one to three among the Atlantic coastal states in recent years. We don't have a lot of released fish, but if you look up the coast, some states are releasing millions of fish. Massachusetts probably harvests 400,000 fish and handles over 4 million annually. New York handles a lot of fish. New Jersey handles a lot of fish. They're all released. We are part of a population structure for striped bass. There is a Chesapeake stock. That Chesapeake stock is also handled up in Massachusetts, as you know, and in other states along the way. So we are very conservative.
Further questions? Thank you, Rob.
Yes, sir.
This is a public hearing. I'd like to open the public hearing. It's Tom Powers. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Powers. I served on the Ad Hoc Committee and FMAC.
Thank you.
The MRF suffers from the issue, I think, here is it suffers from stratification and dockside intercepts relative to the distribution effort. And what I mean by that is, for instance, with striped bass, you looked at that list Rob had up, 600 striped bass in Wave 6. 10 of them were intercepted at locations north of Hampton, Virginia, and the town of Cape Charles on the Eastern Shore. The rest of them were south of that, and that, I think, is a big part of the problem this particular year. It's skewed towards larger fish. This particular year, I went through and looked at the data again like I did in 2005. There were fish that were intercepted in Cape Charles and Kiptopeque, most of which were one fish trips. If you look at the number of anglers and number of fish landed, it was one per person. These were guys that were eeling out there off a plantation light, and they couldn't catch a second smaller fish. The data is clearly indicated that it shifted. If you look at the percentage landed over the last several years, it tripled last in 2006 of larger fish, and that's fish over 34 inches as compared to previous years. So something happened that spiked it. And what it was, in my opinion, the fact that we had so many intercepts in an area with not that much effort compared to the rest of the state. Yes, it did have a lot of effort, but not compared to the rest of the state. In the ad hoc committee process, no one wanted a closure. And my personal impression was that no one wanted a closure because they felt like none of the public wanted a closure. I left the second meeting from that and went out and posted on TidalFish.com, and it ended up getting put out as a survey because I wasn't sure if closing the last week would get much support or not. I figured if 10% of the people that supported that, I wasn't going to try to push it. 50% of the people on that survey supported closing that last week, which indicates that the ad hoc committee was wrong in the assumption that nobody would support it. The other thing is, this is an issue of meeting a plan. You're talking about pushing effort out into the coastal fishery. That has nothing to do with why we're taking this reduction. We're taking this reduction to meet the weight quota within the Chesapeake Bay. The stocks are more or less okay. I think I read the same an output from the same report from the technical committee, and it indicated that we aren't overfishing or anything like that right now. There might be a little issue with the age structure. If you do go to, I support closing last week. And let me just say, it is not a normal recruitment issue. I have not worked between Christmas and New Year's in 24 years. There are a lot of people like me that take that opportunity as an opportunity to fish because their place of business is closed. You will not get me recruiting for a week before Christmas. As a matter of fact, this is going to hurt me worse because I'm going to be gone the first 2 weeks in December out of town. In my opinion, it would most certainly put more pressure on the large fish. No longer would two 20-inch fish or two 22-inch fish be enough for a day's worth of fishing, and folks would be forced to target larger fish. Additionally, you have the concept of culling out of the cooler. Now, I'm not talking about catching a fish and turning it back. Right now, when I go fishing out in the lower bay, I'll throw a 24-inch fish in the cooler. First nice fish I get like that, there's dinner, I'm set. And then I'll go targeting that over 34-inch fish. And if I don't catch another over 34-inch fish, I'll put another 24, 22-inch fish in the cooler and call it a day. A lot of people would put that 24-inch fish in the cooler just to make sure I get something, and then when they catch an over 34, out of the cooler that fish comes dead, not 8% dead, but dead. It goes back in the water, and it's a dead fish no matter what you do. Additionally, you have this concept of small boat fishermen. You've already cut the small boat fishermen, the inshore fishermen, the upriver fishermen, out of the flounder fishery. If you go to a one-fish limit, you're going to be pushing them out of the striped bass fishery because nobody's going to go out and try to fish around the James River Bridge where it's 18, 19-inch fish during the early December and into mid-December and try to do that because it's not worth it to go for just one fish. They'll refocus their effort on larger fish. People will be shifting more and more to eels. If you look at Rob's data, He indicated that 80%, that 122,000 pounds, or 1.22 million pounds, 80% of the quota last year was in fish larger than 34 inches. It wouldn't take much to push people towards a large fishery and make it so that this fishery goes over again, just strictly on the larger fish. Also, Rob's, in one of his slides, he's had 243,000 pound reduction, and that assumed a flat distribution of effort over the year and landings over the year during wave six. I don't think it's a flat distribution. I don't know about where everybody else fishes, but where I fish, things pick up Thanksgiving week, and the last half of the wave is easy two or three times the effort, especially if the weather is nice, than the first half of the wave. And what that means to me is that it's not a 243,000-pound reduction during that part of the fishery. It'll be easy 400,000 pounds of additional reduction. So, again, I support the close the last week of the season. I think it'll do good. I think it'll put effort off of the water, and it won't push the effort into the larger fish. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Who's next? Yes, sir. Sir, you in the back that raised you, you'll be next.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
My name is Ron Staples. I'm the Virginia State Chairman of the Stripers Forever. And the question that I have is, why does the recreational fisherman always take the cuts and the commercial fisherman doesn't? Well, what I know of, I mean, that's not really put out as far as how much cuts have the commercial fishermen taken and to help out the recreational fishermen.
Rob, you want to give that number or do you want to give the rationale that's been given pertaining to the not exceeding the quota? And
yes, I think if you look at the history of the Baywide quota, it started in 1997 until present. There has been one overage in that time period. It was slight by the commercial fishery. In recent years, because we have a tag-based system, any overages can be adjusted the next year based on average weight. So it's just the type of fishery that we can manage a commercial striped bass fishery fairly closely to the quota. Because of the way the data are collected for the recreational fishery, there's no way to put the brakes on. We don't get our recreational data, and nor do other states, until mid-April of the year following the end of the fishery. So you don't have any ability to manage on the real time.
But with the commercial fishermen, they're normally net fishermen. I mean, the large percentage of them are net fishermen, isn't that correct?
Yes.
And have y'all ever done a study on how many of those fish are thrown back dead because they have a certain amount of tags? Say you've got a mile of net. I'm just making this
up. Sure, 100 feet.
And you have how many fish get in that net? You have 60 tags. I'm just making numbers up here. I don't know anything. So if you have 60 fish, you catch 200, 300, 400 fish. You take the 60 biggest ones. Most of those fish in that net are dead. They go over the side. You're not counting them, correct?
Well, you had a few questions, but the first question, we haven't done a study on the release as such. Delaware has. It's 42%. From a gill net. That is considered the release mortality.
Released alive is what you're saying.
No, released dead, 42%. That data is taken by the ASMSC and used to come up with a assessment of the stock each year. So it is factored in that way. Concerning your second thought, like the recreational fishery, I think commercial fishermen by and large are good planners. There may be times where they run into more fish than expected, but I don't think that's part of the plan.
Okay, I'd just like to say one more thing. Our organization would like to make a rockfish a sport fish. Basically, no recreational fishing, which is five or six states already on the East Coast do this.
You mean no commercial fishing?
No, that's what I meant to say. Excuse me. No commercial fishing for rockfish. And we're not against commercial fishermen. Don't get me wrong. We're just trying to keep our limit the same as what it was, and when the fish goes down, we seem to lose more fish than hardly even worth going out to do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Garrison? Good afternoon, sir.
Mr. Commissioner, members of the commission, My name is Russell Garrison, 83 Reach Lane, Deltaville, Virginia.
Good to have you here, sir.
Can't get Mama to go with me, but anyway, I live down there. I had a little incident happen a few weeks ago, and we were fishing at the range light this year and got checked 3 times in 3 weeks. And while I was in your season, a member of this commission, I fussed to the other commission like they hadn't been checked once in 20 years. So, Steve, you're doing a bang-up job.
Well, thank you, sir. Colonel Waterman, Colonel Rhodes, all y'all, thank you very much. But you're not going to hit me on the other side, are you?
No, sir. Okay. No, sir. I appreciate what you said. Some of you said, you and Jack and Rob, and that we know the system's not right, and I appreciate your comments at the beginning of the public meeting. We do need to change this fishery. We had one checker in Deltaville at Norview Marina. He left at 3 o'clock, so his time was up. So we didn't get a fair shake in the middle of the bay by any means. And I think DGIF that Steve mentioned has a HIP number. If you hunt for migratory birds, ducks, geese, or dove, you have to have a HIP number, which you call in so the National Hunting Service can check that number, and they poll you. They poll probably 50% of the people. And to me, that's a simple solution. This would eliminate people that don't fish, just getting random calls out of the phone book. If you had that number attached to your fishing license, it would be a simple solution. And we would get representation in the whole bay. I'm very convinced of that. And if that representation in the whole bay, I think we catch in the upper and middle bay 50% of the catches. If you notice that graph Rob had, 225 checks were at Lynn Haven. Now, maybe some of those fish came in out of the ocean. I don't know. But could have. So we didn't get anything like we deserve. And how that made the difference. I was at the FMAC meeting last week, and their recommendation kind of surprised me. And since this time, I had a bunch of phone calls that wanted to December 10th to December 31st. The objection I would have to December 10th to December 31st would be that, it's like talked about today, when I get that 34-inch fish, put him in the box. But if I get a 40, I'm going to throw him back overboard. And he did, and that's been done. I don't think we have a lot of that happening now. I see very few fish thrown overboard. I've only seen, living on White Point for 40 years, only seen one violation in rockfish. I think our people are pretty attuned to staying in. I don't know how many tickets Steve people wrote when he was colonel, but I saw very, very few violations, and I was proud of that. I saw one. It was very fragrant, but just didn't see that. And I think when you get your fish, you come home. The closure on December 25th, my grandchildren are out of college then, and they go fishing every day. And that's the big, big fault of this closure. When you get your Christmas money, you're going to spend it at the stores in Kilmarnock and Deltaville and Reedsville and whatnot. The women are shopping. So there's all kind of, the people are not selling gas. So really, you'd be surprised how much shopping money is spent after 25th December.
No, I wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't. Okay. I think there's some detriments to everything we do, and next year we can change it all. The Labor Day weekend, there was not a single boat in the Watcher Frig parking lot. Not one. Not a single trailer there. So, in other words, and Narnie knows there ain't no 18.5 fish on the ocean side. They're just not there and never have been. So we got two systems here we're working at, the flounder on one side and the rockfish on another. Both are very flawed with the present checking system. And I appreciate your comments on how that can be changed and what we might do down the road on that.
Thank you, Ross.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it, sir. Who's next? Hey, Bob. Couldn't see you behind the monitor.
I'm from
good to have you in the Commonwealth.
Yeah, nice to be back. Thank you.
Bob Pride.
Florida was okay, but I like being here better. Thank you. I'm Bob Pride from Pocosin. I'm here representing the Virginia Charter Boat Association today. We met, the board of directors met, and I was there as a participant in the audience. And we talked about these three options at great length. And after a lot of debate, we voted to support option 3. which is the two fish and the one-week closure. The impression was that that would have the least impact on most members' businesses. They felt that there would be a large fallout of people that expected to come and get a couple of fish that would not want to spend the money to come for a single fish. There was a lot of dissent on that issue, and you know, so you probably hear from some of the members that won't agree with the statement, but the official position of the association is option three.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Next. Yes, sir.
Hey, good. I'm Jim Jenrette. I'm a charter boat captain on the Eastern Shore out of Cape Charles. We've got a small group of charter boat captains over here, and we all support option one, primarily because we feel like the closure would affect our business. The only fish that we target, and we're part of the problem, is we target only large fish. We don't catch small fish at that time of the year. We're the group that got the eel fishery started, and so we're primarily looking for large fish. And so that's our stand on it. We feel like these other options, it would close the tackle shop over there in Cape Charles. And two, it would definitely hurt our business because we wouldn't have any of that extra Christmas money to spend after Christmas. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Who's next? Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. My name is Matt Abel. I'm representing the Eastern Shore Anglers Club out of Accomack. We have 350-plus members, and we'd like to ask for your consideration of option one. After taking resource, economic, and just how we like to fish, that option seems to have the least amount of impact on our members and our businesses, and it looked like it was the best for the resource. So I want to thank you very much.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate you coming over. Next. Yes, sir.
My name is Rob Savage. I'm a fishing guide on the Eastern Shore. I'm a member of the club that Matt is representing, and I also want to echo Jim Jenrette's comments, but I would like to expand just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I don't think it's worth our time to spend time talking about the reliability of the data. It is what it is. I'm somewhat disappointed that we didn't talk about changes in the season early on where there are more species to direct effort at, particularly from this business side, or maybe looking at a larger minimum size on the fish. And I'd like to see that under consideration at some point in time.
I can assure you when Rob noticed those numbers as far as the trends were concerned, he's already picked up on that.
Okay.
I bet.
I would seriously question the use of polls on the Internet. First of all, over on the Eastern Shore, a lot of our people do not have Internet access. They do not use email. They had no idea that this was even coming up. There were no public notices, no chance to respond in our local newspapers, radio stations. It's a very unscientific representation.
And we acknowledge that, but it was the first step at responding to something the citizen asked for, and as I think has been made adequately clear, we know that there are significant flaws in that program. Self-selectivity, things like that at this juncture, as would be in other things. So points well made on that.
And the other thing, a couple of other things. Tom Powers mentioned earlier, and this isn't a personal attack, that it's a disadvantage to the small boat bay-bound anglers. I disagree. First of all, this year in particular, from the 21st, Friday the 21st, through the 1st of January, someone can take that entire time off with use of only 5 vacation days. It gives them a chance to fish with family and to pick their days weather-wise. We all know that the weather during the month of December on weekends can be very unsettled. Having that week between Christmas and New Year's gives people a chance to get out and fish that might not be able to otherwise. It will be a great disadvantage, as Jim mentioned, to Eastern Shore tourism, tackle shops, charter boats, and guides like myself. As Jim mentioned, we have primarily a large fish fishery. We have a large contingent of people who do not have access to the ocean fishery. We've got 75 miles plus of coastline on the bayside. people with small boats or boats that are in marinas there can't go out, like a lot of people that responded to the internet polls, if they close it the last of December because I can go fish in the ocean. They don't have that option available to them. And it's a tradition on the Eastern Shore that people go out duck hunting in the morning and go out rock fishing in the afternoon during their Christmas vacation. The Eastern Shore has already taken tremendous hits for the charter business and tackle shops on flounder. We're facing even more on tautogs, it appears like it's coming up. And this closure will affect us adversely, unlike people in the tidewater area and those with larger boats. I'd also like to point out the conservation advantage that Rob mentioned. If we have bad weather, we've got an additional cushion built in. I'd also like to point out that, contrary to what Tom said, a lot of my business are folks who don't care if they take a fish home or not. A lot of them just want one fish to take home with them. Catch and release, the statistics that Rob mentioned in the northeastern states, people are going to fish for rockfish whether they take them home or not. We'll continue to do that. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Who's next? Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Stuart Wright. I drove down here from Charlottesville today.
Good to have you here.
Take some time off from my government job just to voice my opinion. Primarily do all of my fishing on the Eastern Shore. Past 15 years, I've learned a lot from Jim Jenrette. My friends from Charlottesville charter him every year. I've learned a lot from the man. I had a lot of questions about how the data was gathered, and it pleases me to hear that y'all aren't too happy with what you're getting, because we're not too happy with it either, and I'm hoping that can be addressed in the future. Spent 2 hours yesterday typing some stuff out, just some thoughts in my head, and just bear with me. I still remember the years of not being able to catch stripers at all. I heard all about the good old days when you could catch as many as you wanted from the old-timers that taught me how to fish in the bay. I've been lucky enough to witness the rebuilding of this fishery in the late 1980s and have had great days out on the water catching stripers in the mid-1990s until now. Excuse me. I fished for stripers in 2006 from both Matthews County near the area of the Rappahannock and from the Cape Charles side of the bay. I would agree that 2006 was a good year, but not nearly as good as 2001 or 2000, just my personal, you know, good years. We've always found plenty of small fish in November, excuse me, but we rarely catch anything over 34 inches. I mean, it's extremely rare. We still enjoy catching great numbers of 16 to 17-inch fish, I mean, loads of them, which shows that we're still having good spawning success in the rivers, and I'm happy to see that. I was lucky enough to be able to fish out of Cape Charles one weekend in December in 2006. That weekend was the weekend after Christmas. We're out there in a Carolina skiff in T-shirts. It was flat. It was calm. We were eeling. We were catching fish, along with the vast number of boats out there. Everybody seemed to be doing really good with the big stripers. I fished with my two regular fishing partners for 2 days. We kept four fish between 37 and 43 inches. We also managed to catch three fish around 20 inches. So in 2 days of fishing, we kept seven fish, not the 12 we could have kept. Law enforcement was very present there. I commend them for that. The first day we fished, we went out that morning, caught our three big fish, came in, the game warden's waiting for us there, checked our cooler. I asked him, are people breaking the limits? Are people trying to keep slot fish? He said, no, people are trying to swap out coolers and go out and catch three more big fish.
What color uniform do they have on?
These guys were blue, dark blue, and
they would be Marine Police.
Marine Patrol. Not meaning to offend anybody.
Thank you.
Game warden. My wife's in law enforcement too. I get them all confused.
We don't.
But okay. But it gets.
They're better. A wonderful sister agency.
It gets better because you know we talked to the officer that morning. We had our three big fish. We came in. We had lunch. Regrouped. We went out to the bridge that evening to troll up our three small fish. We caught and released tons and tons of small fish. We had our three small fish. We were checked by an officer at the fourth island, too. We came back to Kiptopeque to park the boat. We were checked by an officer at Kiptopeque. So I commend them for their efforts, and I hope they did stop a lot of people from trying to kill too many fish.
Thank you.
So let me try to get back where I was here. The one thing I did notice at the cleaning stations and the docks at Cape Charles was a lack of any smaller fish. Everyone seemed to be content with keeping one big fish and then playing catch and release the rest of the day. Honestly, the three 20-inch fish that we kept that Friday evening were the only small fish I saw anybody keep. I mean, it was basically a one fish limit self-imposed just because there weren't that many small fish around. The reason I mention this is because two of the proposals we discussed today recommend reducing the bag limit to one fish per day. Judging from what I saw last year at the docks in the cleaning system, there already seemed to be a one fish per day bag limit. The vast majority of December striper fishing, myself included, are hunting for the large fish. If these proposals are designed to protect the population of larger spawning size fish, it is clear to me that the seemingly good intentions of these proposals will never work. There is no possible way they will work. Reducing the bag limit to one fish per day will absolutely protect the population of the 18 to 28 inch stripers. No one will be fishing for them at all if the bag limit is lowered to one fish per day, and I personally will not be spending $300 or more in a weekend to catch a single 18 inch fish. What makes this whole matter even more confusing to the fishermen are the numbers being reported regarding the overall population of striped bass on the East Coast. We hear every year about the good spawning success rates. We hear about the great numbers of juvenile fish being reported by the fisheries managers who monitor the numbers of young fish every year. We constantly hear that the population of striped bass is going up. According to the data from the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, the striped bass population has been rebuilt from a historic low of 20 million pounds to a historical high of around 160 million pounds. And for the past decade, the recreational fishermen have been allowed to keep two fish per day. As long as I've been fishing for stripers, which is now over 15 years, it has always been two per day. I still remember when those two fish only had to be at least 18 inches long, and we could keep a pair of 40-inch fish if we caught them. I even did that once in my life on Jim Jenrette's boat, nice 46-inch round of 40. Driving home, we thought about it, and it was like, we really need to stop killing these big fish in those numbers. And sure enough, quite soon after that, we did change the bag limit to two fish per day, but only one allowed over 34 inches. That was a good, well-thought-out move that did something to protect the population of big fish. Options 1 and 2 before us will not really do anything to protect the big spawning class of fish, in my opinion. I've read the proposals over and over, and I can't even in good conscience support any of them because I don't feel like they're going to accomplish what they are set out to do. Even option 3, which closes the season the last week in December, is not going to reduce the harvest by 871,000 pounds. Of course, I'm still having an extremely difficult time believing that we actually caught 2.5 million pounds of stripers in 2006 already. I could support an option that might have a chance of making a difference. I could support a maximum size restriction. If it's over 44 inches long, you need to throw it back and get a release citation. That's just a number I'm throwing out there. Just if I catch a striper over 44 inches, I release it. I do not kill it. I would much rather eat a 37-inch fish.
And in due respect, I'm going to have to ask you to...
I'm almost there. I'm speeding up as fast as I can.
Thank you.
Any idea regarding a maximum size would have to be well thought out because it could also drastically affect the striper tournaments around here. It might have to be implemented from Monday to Thursday or something like that. I could also support more stringent size restrictions in the ocean. The sad thing is I keep waiting for the one proposal that would have an immediate and positive long-term impact on the health and sustainability of striped bass population to be considered and implemented, and that proposal would be to end the commercial fishing of menhaden in the bay once and for all. There's nothing we could do that would make more of an impact on the population of striped bass and other sensitive species. I'm going to skip over it all here a little bit to speed this up. I hope you are able to make a well-informed decision on these proposals with the data you've been given to work with. I really hope the systems used to collect this type of data will improve in the future. I don't have much faith in dockside surveys and in the formulas used to calculate the harvest of striped bass and flounder for that matter. I would be happy to participate in any data collecting programs the government has to offer in order to give them better numbers to use when regulating sensitive fisheries. We obviously need better methods of determining how many fish are being caught each year if we are going to realistically and equitably regulate them. I'm happy to tell you how many fish I've caught per trip or season. I bet out on the bay on my new boat 5 weekends this year, and between me and my crew, we have harvested 3 striped bass and 4 legal flounder this year. We really don't catch as many fish as you're being led to believe. It's tough to do the right thing when your hands are tied from bureaucracy and outdated procedures. Believe me, I know. I work for the government, too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for yours. Who's next? Okay.
Good afternoon, guys. My name is Lenny Lita. I'm a teacher from Greene County, and I'm a sponsor of my local fishing club that I run at school. I support options...
Greene County, Virginia?
Greene County, Virginia, yes, sir. Anyway, I support options number 1 and 2. I can deal with less fish, but I can't deal with less time to fish. really, that's it. Everything else that you guys said, I support. The data should be looked at a little bit better, but right now, if we're comparing all that data and getting everything, that's what we have to work with.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thanks for making the trip out here. Anyone else? Once, twice, public hearing is now closed. The matter's... Rob?
Yes, sir. So busy. Forgot to hand these out earlier. My apologies.
Were these new that have just come in today, or...?
Yes, or yesterday.
Yesterday. Okay.
Saltwater Sport Fishermen Association selects option one, and then you have a private citizen looking at the 1 week closure in December, another private citizen option one, and then one more for option three, which is the closed week in December.
Spin the wheel. Anyone have any questions of Rob? Matters before the commission for discussion. Mr. Bowden.
This is unusual. I started a discussion on recreational fishing. I just kind of really want to set a few things straight, some observations that have been made from the audience. You know, sometimes you have to be careful what you ask for because you may get it. One risk you take in raising the minimum size is lowering the quota, because our quota is based on from 18 to 28-inch fish. So, for example, if you would raise the minimum size to 22 inches, you lose all those fish between 18 and 22, and you'll lower your overall quota. So you really don't... You could get away with it for a year or two as a management measure, but you won't want to do it long term, because they are really after us. A lot of states, ASMFC, to make a minimum size of 24 inches for the entire coast, which would drastically reduce Virginia's quota in the Chesapeake Bay. Another thing the gentleman referred to earlier about the commercial never happened to suffer like the recreational. And the truth of the matter is, commercial has to directly pay any overages back they have. And we make up such a small percentage of the overall straight bass quota. If we were eliminated, it really wouldn't have the effect you think it would, because commercial catches probably 15% or less of the entire catch. In comparison, the hook and release mortality is 8% of fish caught by recreational fishermen. In a lot of years, that far exceeds the whole commercial catch and discard. So, you know, just a few little observations I think people need to be made aware of. In general, that's all I want to do is try to inform people that some of the statements they made were incorrect, that I don't think intentionally they were probably well meant, well thought out, but I just wanted to correct that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bowden. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Based on the comments we initially saw, I guess related to the poll, looked like there was considerable public support for the option that closed the last week of December. And yet, based on the discussions we've had here today and testimony we've heard from the public as well as staff, certainly based on what Rob's told us about the department's experience in the past with trying to implement and get conservation benefits out of short seasonal closures, for example, in the flounder fishery, it's difficult to fully achieve the conservation benefit. But I guess that gets back to the question of the need for action and how critical is it. And I would submit that based on what we've heard, it is quite critical that we take an action that is strong enough to get us where we need to get in terms of conservation savings. Because if we don't do this, and we recognize, and I share your concerns, Mr. Chairman, and the concerns we've heard about the quality and problems with the MERS data, but that's what we're dealing with, and that's perhaps more importantly,
exactly right.
That's what we're up against at the ASMFC. That's what's going to be used against us in the event that we have an overage. And I hate to think of what a corrective action would look like if it included a payback for this fishery. I mean, I think it would result in drastic cuts relative to what we're contemplating here today. And just looking through this, one aspect of the options we're considering that's somewhat unique is that these are not conservation equivalents. In other words, options one, two, and three don't propose to conserve the same poundage of fish. For example, option one would conserve 727,000. That would be the closure from December 10th through December 31. That's significantly less than the actual average experienced in 2006, which was 871. So while there was some support voice for the closed season, first of all, it would only accomplish 672,000 pounds of savings, but I think there are very real questions about whether or not it would actually achieve that savings if it simply temporarily displaces effort. For example, I used to fish for rockfish a lot, and I probably only go once or twice a year, and I usually go that week. I would simply go the week before, and I may not be representative of all the anglers in the state, but it seems like there is some opportunity for displaced effort, and I think that would undermine the conservation benefit. So I think staff's recommendation is actually a reasonable compromise, because option two, by contrast, would save 849,000 pounds and would close the fishery, or would have a one fish limit from December 1 through 31, whereas option one is from December 10 through 31, saving 727,000 pounds. I think that's a reasonable recommendation for action.
Further comment? Mr. Tankard?
I agree. I support option one, and I also maintain, as the teacher pointed out, that it allows more folks to spend more time on the water for that one fish, and they can enjoy what they're doing, which is fishing. And we get the environmental and ecological benefit of that option, so that would be my support as well, option one.
On the right side of my table, any comments? Mr. Schick, then Dr. McConaughey.
Yes, I would tend to go with option one or two. You know, the trophy season in the spring seems to do pretty well. That's a one fish season. Likewise, this time of year, you know, we are talking about people targeting larger fish in general, and that's what they want to go for. And I think I would hate to see the repercussions of not doing something that's going to work. So that's my opinion.
Dr. McConaughey?
I was going to echo what most of these people have said, too. I support option number one. Given the quality of the data and the consequences of not doing anything, it seems like the most reasonable approach to take.
Mr. Fox?
I think that any of the options are going to make some people angry, and we have to understand that, but I think, as Mr. Robbins pointed out, the consequences of going over our quota and having something severe imposed on us would be much worse. I guess from my perspective of where I live, the option that would hurt us the least would be option number three, because we are fishing more in October and November and catching the smaller fish, and by the end of the year the fish have gone down the bay, and so I guess I would go for number three if I were supporting solely where I'm from. I guess I would encourage Rob and the rest of the staff to consider a maximum size limit. And I don't know what effect that might have on the weight, and I don't know how you deal with the tournament aspect of catching large fish. I don't know how you deal with that, and certainly that is not one of the proposals, so I'm not going to suggest it. But I think I would support number three. But I also hear the arguments for number one. I don't see many arguments for number two.
Mr. Holland?
I move the adoption of option one.
Second.
Second. Discussion. Further discussion? Well, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank everyone for a very civil debate. The tone of the emails, the dialogue that went on, I think, leads right up to what you were saying, Mr. Fox. You know, some people may want certain parameters for certain locations or certain special situations, and that's only natural. That's human nature, and that's the way it is. But the decisions that are made up here by the commission are made from a state body perspective and what is supposed to be in the best interest of all. And with that, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Option one. Rob, as usual, wonderful job. Jack, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
We're going to take about a 7-minute break. Been here for a good hour and a half and not moved. We'll be back a little bit after 2.
I don't see anything in here about beer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anything in there about beer.
Looks like a teach in the morning.
Yes.
Excuse
me. Well, that doesn't say anything about
beer.
Jack, while you and Dr. Westner are looking through there, Mr. Jensen wants to make a supposed comment, so I'll give him it. Mr. Jensen?
I have a scientist here that I want to say a few things first.
What's it in reference to?
It's in reference to AMF. The Navy's facility out in the river.
Is that the matter? That's a matter of civil litigation in the city of Newport News Court at the present time.
It's a matter of yes. It's
thank you, Mr. Josephson.
Yeah, Captain Jensen. This is a matter in litigation, and to the extent that it's in litigation, my suggestion is that you need to refer whatever.
I'm sorry, I can't.
Whatever issues you have, you need to tell the judge.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Talk to the judge.
Right.
Well, that's what we'll do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Next item on the agenda is item number 10. Proposed amendments to Regulations 4 VAC 20-260,